Saga Egmont presents The Borgia's Spy by Andrea Frediani. Read by Jot Davis. Prologue. Rome, summer 1497.
Are you tired, Your Holiness?
With his customary zeal, Burcardo, the master of ceremonies, woke the pontiff from the torpor to which he had abandoned himself at the end of the hearing. The defendants had taken their leave a while ago, but the head of Christianity found even getting up from his throne and heading towards his cubicle in the adjacent tower he'd had built in the Apostolic Palace burdensome. Alexander VI, known to his parents as Rodrigo Borgia, merely nodded his head. Despite having exceeded 60 years of age, he had always felt like a bull, just like the animal he contemplated now, high up in front of him, on top of the Arch of Constantine, which the able Pinturicchio had painted 4 years earlier as a background to the fresco on the opposite wall, the Disputation of St. Catherine in Alexandria. The bull, the symbol of his family. He had always been faithful to it, perhaps more to that than to Christ, as his 7 children could well testify after his ascent to the papal throne, which he had finally achieved 5 years earlier. His inexhaustible activity to strengthen the fortunes of the family and the power of the church, the strenuous defence of its position from the many enemies that threatened it relentlessly. But since that accursed day, 2 weeks ago, something had changed in him. The force that had driven him to face all those difficulties with determination and unscrupulousness suddenly started to diminish, making him finally feel like the tired old man he actually was at his age. He had always looked down on the older cardinals who sat around him in the consistory, but now he sensed he was no different from them, and he felt ashamed. If only Julia, the faithless Julia, had not betrayed him at the time of the French invasion, at least she could have comforted him, alleviated his pains in the face of the greatest pain he had ever experienced in his life. Perhaps only her translucent skin, her mischievous smile, and her intoxicating smell would have had the power to distract him, to reawaken him from the suffering that, from that ominous day, had not abandoned him for a moment. But she was no longer there. She was gone. Or maybe he had thrown her out. He didn't even remember what had happened. And he didn't dare go and let off some steam with Van Nozza, with whom his relationship had long since run its course since he had started neglecting her for his new lover. Nor could he do it with anyone else in his family. Until he knew the truth, he ran the risk of confiding in the wrong person. He noticed that Burcardo was still waiting for his orders. He was the only one left in the hall. He waved to him.
Leave me alone for a while. I want to enjoy these beautiful paintings, he lied, gesturing to the extraordinary deluge of images that surrounded him on the walls and on the ceiling. The truth was that he didn't want to do anything, not even go to his bedroom to rest. When the master of ceremonies had gone, however, the anguish of his soul quickly gave way to the innate curiosity of his mind, which allowed itself to be distracted and entranced by the magnificent frescoes in the hall. Alexander willingly let himself be carried away by the thoughts that the images evoked, grateful to the person who had created them for having had the power, with his art, to distract him, at least for a few moments, from his pain. The painter had shown himself much less skilled in the subsequent task he had assigned to him, which was not strictly artistic. But the world depicted before his eyes showed him, in an unequivocal way,